Welcome to Tribulation News with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Motke. Wow, so much has happened in the last, two, 3 weeks already, and we're almost done with January. It's absolutely ridiculous. I was going to do half Bible study, half news, but there's just so much going on. I absolutely have to cover news. So I hope you enjoy it, and this is going to be a great show, and thank you for listening. All right. Doug Hagman's articles, I always have to have those on the air because they are really well written and he says it like it is and I love it. So, okay, first article. It's Time We Became Leaders by Doug Hagman. This was posted January 2nd. If I did it previously, it's because it's extra important if I'm doing it twice already now. Okay, here's what it has to say. As responsible adults and leaders within our families, it is time to have an important and intellectually honest discussion about our immediate future. We need to talk about the very harsh realities facing us and make some extremely important decisions on behalf of ourselves, our families, and our country. We need to do it now. I believe that the majority of people reading this have abandoned the youthful indiscretions associated with the annual change of the calendar and did some very serious thinking about the holiday. I suspect that many of you who are reading this feel that you are very much alone in your thinking, perhaps to the point of even second-guessing yourself in some respects. I suspect that there are members of your family and people within your close circle of friends who refuse to believe that things are as dire as you tell them, while others have simply not taken the time to genuinely assess and comprehend what's taking place around them. In either case, and despite the unpleasantness of the task, I believe that you must accept the responsibility of leadership to preserve and protect yourselves, your families, and yes, even your country. Accepting the responsibility of leadership, however, first requires an honest evaluation of current events while dispelling the myths and lies we are being forced to accept as fact. Perhaps the most formidable obstacle to overcome and to assist others to realize is that we are constantly and deliberately being lied to by the corporate media in all of its forms. The syndicated media, journalists, commentators, panel members of news programs, and others whose faces and voices are commonly hear and recognize exist because they are permitted to exist, regardless of their political affiliation. Some agree to operate within certain confined areas of discussion, while others exist to openly advance the stepping stone of socialism for a seat promised at the table of global governance. Knowing that the media is lying to us and convincing people otherwise are two distinctly different issues. From an early age, we've been trained to believe what is reported on the news network or in newspapers, for they alone have established the standards of truth and integrity. Perpetuating lies and disinformation through the media is much easier today than ever before, as we have an older generation that continues to trust the information provided by the major networks and the print media typified by the old gray lady. Meanwhile, a younger generation relies on comedians by profession for their news, people like Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, and others who appear to be the trendy antithesis of the old school media stalwarts. In truth, their objectives are the same, and they stand against God and the Constitution. Those of us leading the change for truth find ourselves battling this eclectic mix of entrenched and trendy formidable opponents as they continue to tell us that everything is fine and getting better. They have entranced large portions of multiple generations like accomplished magicians performing their magic, stage magic. The performers are supporting cast that they are taking part in an illusion so convincing and captivating that it replaces rational thinking with an alternate reality. Meanwhile, political pundits of all stripes are comfortable using their face and talk time and print space and political theater to convince others that there is a viable solution to save our country through a particular political party or candidate. The answer, we are told, lies in the results of the next election or the next congressional vote, as if they are broadcasting the play-by-play action of a football game to a captive audience. As true leaders, however, we are able to see well beyond the playing field and over the stadium walls. We are seeing everything outside of the stadium being razed and burned to the ground, while everyone is fixated by the action on the field. We must not only resist the futile fixation, but assist others in overcoming their political myopia and normalcy bias so we can discuss our plans to save ourselves, our families, and our future. We need to see through the magician's fog as the media continues to report economic conditions that originate from cooked books and have no basis in reality. The media continues to report the partisan struggle to reach a deal on the fiscal cliff, while the reality is that our fate has already been decided, and the perception of the partisan acrimony is akin to a professional wrestling match. The adult reality is that the game is rigged and has been rigged for the last century. The days of the U.S. dollar are numbered, and the collapse you'll ultimately witness is by design. Once our currency is lost, so too is our sovereignty, then our freedom, as well as the freedom of our children and their children. We must discuss what others won't. We must expose the counterfeit banking system, the fraudulent debt, and the corporate fascism. We must demand redress of those who have placed us in the position of slavery and abandon allegiance to anything except God and our Constitution. At the same time, our liberties remain under assault under the guise of security. The powers are laughing at us, and sadly, many among us don't believe it, have fallen under the spell, or have accepted it as a new normal. The powers they have used on the average American will not only forfeit their constitutional rights, but their own human dignity at the hands of the TSA. Many men have abandoned their role as protector of their own families and allowed, without objection, their own wives, daughters, and mothers and sons to be sexually molested or exposed to radiation at airports. Against the backdrop of such historical and shameful acquiescence, this tyrannical body of leaders, empowered and emboldened by our historical acquiescence, is now coming for our guns. It's for the children, they will say. The same children they have aborted away or sold into perpetual bondage through a corrupt economic system. The safety of the children, permitted to survive and perpetually mortgaged, absent of any objection, will trump our Second Amendment rights and vastly curtail our First Amendment rights faster than banning a big gulp in New York City. Count on it. It is therefore up to us, to you reading this column, or for those of you obviously listening to this program, to accept the mantle of leadership. We must have a discussion right now, far more meaningful than sound bites and bullet points, partisan politics, and business as usual. From this discussion, we must chart a plan of action. While the majority of the population is entertained or clinging with white knuckles to their normalcy bias, we do not have the luxury of time or the ability to keep drawing new lines in the sand as we are being forced backward into a state of subjugation and slavery. We need to decide right now where our line in the sand is and even make plans to recover lost liberties. We must make our individual stands known so we may become the collective resistance against the tyranny that is about to be unleashed upon us. We need to replace our virtual beer muscles some have developed as anonymous keyboard warriors with genuine courage and a plan of action to restore our God-given rights and freedoms established by the U.S. Constitution. If you're reading this, or obviously listening to this, you are a leader. As leaders, we must unite and discuss how to accomplish this and do it now while we still can. Wow, powerful article. I could not resist but reading that. Next article. Remember this. DHS and TSA making a list, checking it twice. Okay, updated January 7, 2013, following the National Opt-Out Day protest of 2010. And then this is what it has to say. Following the publication of my article titled Gate Rape of America, I was contacted by a source within DHS who is troubled by the terminology and content of an internal memo reported issued yesterday at the hands of DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano. Indeed, both the terminology and content contained in the document are troubling. The dissemination of the document itself is restricted by virtue of its classification, which prohibits any manner of public release. While the document cannot be posted or published, the more salient points are revealed here. The memo, which actually takes the form of an administrative directive, appears to be the product of an undated but recent high-level meeting between Napolitano, John Pistol, head of the Transportation Security Administration, and one or more of Obama's national security advisors. This document officially addresses those who are opposed to or engage in the disruption of the implementation of the enhanced airport screening procedures as domestic extremists. The introductory paragraph of the multi-page document states that it is issued in response to the growing public backlash against enhanced TSA security screening procedures and the agents conducting the screening process. Implicit within the same section is that the recently enhanced security screening procedures implemented at U.S. airports and the measures to be taken in response to the negative public backlash as detailed in this directive have the full support of the president. In other words, Obama not only endorses the enhanced security screening, but the measures outlined in his directive to be taken in response to public objections. The terminology contained within the reported memo is indeed troubling. It labels any person who interferes with TSA airport security screening procedures, protocol, and operations by actively objecting to the established screening process, including but not limited to the anticipated national opt-out day, as a domestic extremist. The label is then broadened to include any person, group, or alternative media source that actively objects to cause others to object to, supports, and or elicits support for anyone who engages in such travel disruptions at U.S. airports in response to the enhanced security procedures. For individuals who engage in such activity as screening points and instructs TSA operations to obtain the identities of those individuals and other applicable information and submit the same electronically to the Homeland Environment Threat Analysis Division, the Extremism and Radicalization Branch of the Office of Intelligence and Analysis Division of the Department of Homeland Security. For any person, group, or domestic alternative media source, they actively object to causes others to object to, supports, and or elicits support for anyone who engages in such travel disruptions at U.S. airports as defined above, in response to the enhanced security procedures, the applicable DHS administrative branch is instructed to identify and collect information about the persons or entities and submit such information in the manner outlined within this directive. It would appear that the Department of Homeland Security is not only prepared to enforce the enhanced security procedures at airports, but is involved in gathering intelligence about those who don't. They're making a list and most certainly will be checking it twice. Meanwhile, legitimate threats to our air travel security, and they do exist, seem taking a backseat to their larger threat of the multitude of non-criminal Americans who object to having their constitutional rights violated. As I've written before, it has nothing to do with security and everything to do with control. And that's right, and the theme of this show, which you'll probably notice, is mainly about guns and gun control and disarming Americans, like we did 2 weeks ago. So a lot has happened since then, and I wanted to do an update on that with the most recent articles. Okay, here's another article from Doug Hagman. It's about more than guns. Okay, this was posted January 10th, and here's what he said. The warning signs of a tyrannical takeover of our constitutional republic has been flashing red for some time now and are now reaching a fever pitch. Despite the flashing signs, the clamor of the alarms, and the cries of the watchmen, most Americans of this era remain in denial or have been rendered intellectually catatonic by busily chasing immediate gratification in the form of the newest version of the iPhone, iPad, or whatever iDevice will satisfy their ADHD-addled intellect. Others have simply chosen to adhere to a normalcy bias that is continuously fed by the familiar faces and voices of political pundits who remain dedicated to the lie of the right-left Republican-Democrat paradigm of American politics, unwilling or unable to look at the larger picture for fear of being shamed by accusations of being part of a conspiracy fringe. Instead of these pundits would rather ignore the lie and squander their ability to make a difference, to educate and inform others of the dangers of the lie they know exists. We must realize that we are not witnessing the fundamental change of America as represented by the mindless mantra of the Obama campaign, but something much deeper, much more nefarious, and something that will not be rectified through the ballot box. As uncomfortable as it is, what we face cannot and will not wait for the next general election. Actions have consequences, but so does inaction. We are living in a time of history where some will rise to be held in esteem as heroes in history books that have yet to be written, and victims who never saw their unfortunate status coming or were fooled into believing that things are not as bad as some make them out to be. The former will suffer greatly by selfless acts performed to save what previous generations have fought to preserve, while the latter will remain complicit by their cluelessness and catatonic in ignorance that will be anything but blissful. The fuse that will ignite one of the most turbulent times in American and global history has been lit and now burns with incredible speed. Its ignition is neither an accident nor does it originate from good intent, but a deliberate act by a deluded elite advancing an agenda that is so breathtakingly evil that it defines all rationality. There is a familiar adage known as Hamon's razor that states, never or ever attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. Unfortunately, too many people have chosen to believe that the events we are seeing, including all of the related consequences, are due to the incompetence of those who have been elected and appointed to lead our nation. This is particularly evident by those who continue to pervade the defunct notion of the right left Republican Democrat paradigm of the American politics and the people who follow them. We are not witnessing incompetence, but the fulfillment of an agenda generations in the making. A century ago, our republic experienced a coup in the form of a monetary takeover through the creation of the Federal Reserve, followed by a consolidation of power through the IRS. We were slowly being led into a system of global governance by the same international banking cabal that exists today, yet too few understand the larger picture. Over a half century ago, Senator Joe McCarthy was vilified by trying to warn Americans that our government was being infiltrated by communists. Much like today, his warnings went unheeded, and the infiltration of the communist element into America thrived. History books have not only been unkind, but incorrect, as we are bearing witness today to the very threat of which he warned. In fact, documents and testimony related to his findings were found to have been inexplicably removed from the National Archives, not in the 1950s, but as late as the 1990s. The timing of such removal is no accident. The communist infiltration combined with the Islamic infiltration, the balkanization of America through our open borders and lax immigration enforcement, and numerous other policies and practices antithetical to the survival of our republic have been embraced and advanced by both political parties to bring us to the point we find ourselves today. We are on the verge of a civil war, exactly as warned by my source inside the DHS last spring. The civil war is designed to divide America, to soften us, and ultimately destroy us from within. United, our republic poses an insurmountable impediment of the implementation of a global society rooted in communism and disguised as social progressivism. The methods of implementation are not secret. They are outlined in part by the Cloward-Piven strategy and well-documented by Carol Quigley, a guard of the Clinton power structure. At the base of the agenda exists the Fabian Socialists, Karl Marx, Antonio Gramsci, and the Frankfurt School of Neo-Marxist Interdisciplinary School Theory. Today we find ourselves at the precipice of a tyrannical takeover and the complete destruction of our republic, best illustrated by the talks of disarming the American populace. The assertion is that it's for the children, when in fact the children are being used as political capital to advance the political agenda of American disarmament, loss of liberty, sovereignty, and the rights bestowed on our republic by God as enumerated by our Constitution. Notice how there is a war not only against gun owners, but a parallel war against the very Judeo-Christian principles on which this country was founded. Today we are facing a crisis of epic proportions, where you will have to choose a side. Will you be the one who stands bravely and alone before a column of tanks, or will continue on your quest for instant gratification? The war we face is not just about guns. It's about our survival as a nation and the fate of our children, grandchildren, and future generations. Which side of history will you be on? Okay, here's one more article from Doug, posted January 16th, and it is called Understanding the Obama Conspiracy and the U.S. Takeover. Here's what he had to say. The constitutional government of the United States has been overthrown, and the American people have been captured. The only question now is that what we are, as true American believing that our Constitution is the one and only law of the land, going to do about it? it's not simply a matter of what the blowback from the tyranny being thrust upon us will look like, how or even if it will play out. If you're looking for normal political solutions out of this legal, financial, moral, and spiritual mess of the country, I believe that time has long passed. If your hope rests in change with the midterm elections, go back to sleep, or better yet, increase the dosage of your medication. It's clearly evident by the actions and inaction of the spineless or compromised leaders in whom you've placed your hope and future and the future of your children and grandchildren that doing so again will change nothing. We are a captured operation, and partisan politics is nothing more than a theater to divert your attention from the iron fist of tyranny that is about to change life as you know it. You must understand that our nation today is ruled not by Democrats or Republicans, but by the party of royalty with a European mindset and a globalist agenda. The morphing from a two-party system into one of elite royalty did not happen overnight, but incrementally and under the proverbial radar of a deliberately distracted public. Much of what you see, hear, and read is a lie, so big that you don't recognize it as a lie, and so bold that it operates without question or impediment right in front of us. There are plenty of writers and talkers who will sugarcoat the lie or participate the political theater for airtime, print space, or a paycheck, but I refuse to be one of them. Allow me to walk you through my investigative findings into the Obama conspiracy to show you just how deep the lie goes. By the end of this summary report, I hope that you will better understand the lie, the objectives of those involved, and the fate intended for us all. Okay, here's a quote that he does an article. Did you really believe we want those laws absurd? Said Dr. Ferris. We want them to be broken. You better get it straight that it's not just a bunch of Boy Scouts you're up against. We're after power and we mean it. There's no way to rule innocent men. The only power any government has is the power to crack down on criminals. Well, when there aren't enough criminals, one makes them. One declares so many things to be a crime that it becomes impossible for men to live without breaking laws. Who wants a nation of law-abiding citizens? What's there in that for anyone? But just pass the kind of laws that can neither be observed nor enforced or objectively interpreted, and you create a nation of lawbreakers, and then you cash in on guilt. Now that's the system. Mr. Reardon, that's the game. And once you understand it, you'll be much easier to deal with. And the person who said this was Ayn Rand from Atlas Shrugged. Would you believe it if I wrote that the government is not after our guns? Probably not, as it certainly looks that way with the pending executive orders and new gun legislation. Well, the guns are secondary. I urge you to think bigger. Think outside the box. Make no mistake about this. They'll come after our guns, but they're coming after us. By believing in the Constitution, we've earned ourselves a spot on the latest incarnation of the White House enemies list. By supporting the Constitution as the ultimate law of the land, we've identified ourselves as an enemy of the state. By clinging to our guns and Bibles, we pose as a danger to the globalist agenda rooted in socialism, fascism, and communism. By understanding that we are being victimized by an opt-out controlled banking system, we have earned a spot on the single cause terrorist watch list. By becoming informed of the tyranny that exists before us, we have become a threat to their future ultimate global objectives. They are afraid of not just the guns, but of by a well-armed and well-informed populace that understands the meaning and intent of the Second Amendment. It is the well-informed and well-armed that they fear, as they should. They are racing against the clock as we become more informed and better armed. Accordingly, they must act in haste as they see us rapidly peeling away the layers of lies that have kept us insulated for so long. Certainly, they will attempt to get our guns, but make no mistake that it's us, or those unwilling to be serfs, who they are after. Their hunt will be relentless, matching their endgame objective of creating the royal elite while enslaving the unwashed. Those among us who believe they can talk their way out of an illegal government confiscation by claiming the loss of their guns in some boating accident are self-deluded and not understand the larger picture. Adherence to this delusion is not only selfish, childish, and naive, but a dangerous and underestimation of the intent of the tyranny that lies before us. We must face what lies ahead like adults and prepare ourselves accordingly. Ecclesiastes 1:9. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there's no new thing under the sun. The hour is late and time is short. A rapid understanding of the lie and how deep it goes is required right here, right now. We can briefly look at a few key events that not have changed history, but will also reveal the tyrannical playbook of the global elite that has remained unchanged for the past century. From the attack on Pearl Harbor to the assassinations of JFK, RFK, and MLK, to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, through the attack that changed the world on September 11, 2001, each event is deeply mirrored in various levels of deception, controversy, inconsistencies, unanswered questions, and conflicting accounts. The farther we travel away from each event, the less chance the actual truth will ever be made known, at least in time to make a difference. Even worse, reasonable people seeking sensible and honest answers and wanting nothing less than the complete truth are routinely vilified and forced into accepting the official accounts of the various events being questioned. Two of the most recent relevant issues that remain mirrored in controversy and off-limits to inquiring minds are Obama's eligibility status and the attacks of September 11, 2001. Despite official accounts regarding the former, the issue remains a legitimate controversy to the extent that Barack Hussein Obama II, a.k.a. Barry Sotero, has yet to prove his eligibility to hold office under the Constitution of the United States. Despite what has been reported or accepted as fact, Obama has never produced authenticated hard copy documentation of his certificate of live birth, verification of his Social Security number and related documentation, his Selective Service documents, or his official passport records. Even the most hardcore conservatives have long argued that the entire eligibility matter is a fringe issue unworthy of discussion. Much like the previous controversies referenced, we are forbidden to have sensible discussion on the matter, at least not without obligatory vilification, yet vital and relevant questions remain unanswered amid the requisite obfuscation, diversion, and yes, vilification. We are not permitted to know the bona fides of the man who is tasked with transforming the United States from a constitutional republic into a tyrannical kingdom of royalty and serfs. Questions related to his eligibility are never answered. Instead, they are met with accusations of racism and bigotry where none is ever intended or warranted. Such questions are also met with objections that the issue distracts from other more important issues. What could be more important than the background and eligibility of the man who holds the most powerful position in our country and arguably the world? Perhaps never allowing these questions to be addressed was the plan from the start. If so, it's a tactic that certainly fits with information that follows. Also, there remains very legitimate and very relevant questions about the attack of September 11, 2001, the event that changed the world. Instead of being able to hold a rational, thoughtful discourse about valid concerns, any questions are met with accusations that those asking the questions are lunatics enamored by delusions of some grand conspiracy. Are we not entitled to answers about an event that resulted in the creation of governmental policies and agencies that are responsible for the most intrusive attacks on the liberties of every American? From the attacks of 9/11 to Obama's eligibility to even the most basic questions surrounding the recent Sandy Hook school shooting, yes, there are inconsistencies in need of answers. We cannot have a reasonable discussion without being castigated and marginalized as conspiracy nuts. You see that the stage for asking such questions has been set throughout time. After all, who are we, the unwashed masses, to question our leaders about anything of substance? Now, those of us who seek only the truth must fight against the putrid hubris of the likes of the Obama and his minions, the Clintons, the Feinsteins, the Kiyomos, New York Mirror, Bloomberg, and others who hold the reins of power. To be completely honest and fair, such unbridled hubris extends to those on the right as well, including the members of the Bush dynasty, John Boehner, Lindsey Graham, and countless others. Again, we are not governed by political parties, but ruled by royalty who have erected firewalls of protection against the common people, us, the serfs. Although they did not create the current perspective, they most assuredly embraced and advanced it. How dare we, the uninitiated and unwashed, question their words and actions? Their tasks become easier as they have firmly established their advanced teams within the press to further their objectives. They know the power of the airways in print and use the likes of Piers Morgan, the chameleon for the modern-day Camelot, and arguably a man with no love for our constitutional republic to do their bidding. The political right has similar truth suppressors who trade their morals and integrity for a paycheck and the future of our nation for a promised seat at the table of power. And we the people, who have built this nation with the sweat of our brow and the skin of our knuckles are scolded like children when we dare ask for the truth. Such is the perspective or the backdrop from which we must now operate. America is more than a piece of land. It is a mindset and ideology that was founded on the Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. Our founders left England and established our great nation to rid themselves of the oppression we are seeing return with even greater force and oppressiveness. But something happened to many of us over the years to make us more accepting of the British or European model of governance, which is exactly what we are seeing take over our nation. It is a push for globalism, a global governance, a singular mindset drafted and choreographed by the most rich and powerful families of the world. As Americans, we've been set up. Perhaps it began in 1913 when America was force-fed the lie of our current and corrupt monetary system with the establishment of the Federal Reserve. Then came the creation of the Internal Revenue Service, which was consolidation of power, regulating our wealth from the League of Nations to the United Nations. The push for consolidation of power by the few to rule the many has been the objective. As we progress through the 20th century, can we now look back and see with increasing clarity that communist infiltration in nearly every branch of government, our centers of higher learning and all schools, complements of the creation of the Department of Education, as well as the press? Can we now see with clarity that America, too strong to be taken down from the outside, is being taken down from within? Can any rational, sane person explain the run-up to and consequences of the financial crisis of 2008, our unbridled debt of over $16 trillion? As you watch the evening news or listen to political pundits talk of recovery and improving economic conditions, do you wonder what planet they are from or whether they actually believe their lies? Do you honestly believe that we had fair elections in 2012? How about 2008, 2004, or even 2000? America was set up from the inside to be destroyed. Our children have been sold into slavery to illegal debt created by a cabal of central banks based in London. Perhaps that's the reason Barack Hussein Obama, or whatever his real name is so reluctant to show his papers, as perhaps he's really a British citizen, as his father, who hailed from Kenya, who actually a British subject, which would make Obama a British national. Could it be that we've been taken over once again by the British Empire? Is European socialism being used as a stepping stone to communism and then to global governance or a new world order? You know, something new about it. When the American dollar collapses, and it must, which country will play a major role in replacing our defunct economic system? Great Britain. So in one fell swoop, America will become beholden to Great Britain and all of its laws once again. People like Michael Savage, who's already on Her Majesty's radar, might want to consider those implications. Perhaps that's why Piers Morgan is smirking and acting as if he owns America. In any event, what are we, true American patriots and not just keyboard warriors, prepared to do about it? The time to decide is now. The time to act will be soon. And on that note, we will take a brief 1 minute break. Hi, this is Dr. Elizabeth Mackey. Thank you for listening today. Please make a donation at BBS Radio at radio station number 2 under the Tribulation News link. That is on Sunday nights from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you for your time and your willingness to listen to the latest news and latest information that is pertinent as we enter perilous times. We'll be right back. Okay, more headlines to cover that have happened in the last week. In fact, today on stevequayle.com in the Q alerts, here's something that is very pertinent that I need to read. Okay, he says, my brother has a friend that is ex-military and is a part of the security team for DHS in Omaha, Nebraska, who has seen files with the presidential seal on them. He also said DHS is stockpiling body armor, the gas used in Waco, and the gas that causes people to go to sleep. Also, military equipment used expressly to detain people. He said one detention site in Bellevue at 25th and Cornhusker, but there are others he will show my brother. My brother does car body work, and he said there is a Russian body shop in Lincoln, Nebraska. Okay, remember, we're becoming like modern-day Nazi Germany, so keep that in the back of your mind. Also, keep Revelation 13 in the back of your mind while I read a lot of these, except the one I'm about to read now is from Infowars.com. It's posted today. Iranian ambassador, only war can stop us now. Obviously, it's January 24th. So, Revelation 9 and Psalm 83. So, here is what the article has to say. Iranian ambassador Hassan Donay Far says that the only way the United States can put a halt to Iran's nuclear program is by resorting to war, a move that would prompt the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, a key oil choke point. The only remaining card on the table is war. Is it to their benefit? Is it to the benefit of the world? Is it to the benefit of the region? And then what else Mr. Barack Obama can do? The ambassador also reiterated threats made previously by Tehran to close the Strait of Hormuz, through which around a third of the world oil passes in response to any military action by the United States. If there is some movement and action from our enemies, including U.S. against us, as a part of a natural reaction, that may happen, said Donay Far, warning that under such an eventuality, everybody would be a loser. Last month, Iran decided that it was planning to close the strait amidst six-day naval drills centered in the geopolitically crucial region. During the drills, Tehran was forced to warn off foreign surveillance planes that were attempting to keep tabs on the exercises on no less than 30 occasions. Back in July, Iran's Major General Hussein, can't read his last name very well, announced that Iran had finalized all the necessary preparations to close the strait upon orders from Supreme Leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, however you say it. False rumors that the strait was closed have previously sent oil prices soaring. Experts have predicted that oil prices will surge to $300 to $500 a barrel if Iran closes the shipping channel in retribution for a U.S.-Israeli attack on the country's nuclear facilities. Washington has repeatedly warned that any closure of the strait would represent a red line that would be catalyst for military action. And also, what will also bring the gas, oil, all those prices going up, we are currently going through currency wars with China. I think Japan is involved, and Russia, and soon to be Europe. So we're about to have hyperinflation, because I've also noticed recently where I live that gas jumped up 20 cents this week alone within a period of 3 or 4 days. So keep your eyes on the gas prices for right now, but I want to encourage you to, hopefully whenever you do go to the store, you don't freak out, because that will eventually jump too. Everything is going to double. So if you get the chance, invest in gold and silver, because that too is very limited, because the derivatives market is also on the verge of crashing as well. So, like I said, keep Revelation 13 in the back of your mind. Okay, let's see here. While we're on the idea of war, let me read another article about war here. North Korea says nuke tests target U.S. When I saw that title today, I was like, what? But it doesn't surprise me, because we're supposed to have World War III, according to Revelation 9. It's supposed to happen. But we need to be in prayer, big time, and pray for these people that are lost, lukewarm, and asleep, that they repent, confess their sins, and name Jesus as Lord of their life before it is too late. Because otherwise, they're going to spend eternity in the pit of hell, and I don't want them to go there. I want them to be in heaven. I love them that much. Even though they hate me, I love them. So here's what the article has to say. It's actually pretty short. In fact, this is what it says. In a bellicose statement singling out the United States as a sworn enemy of the Korean people, North Korea today announced plans for a third nuclear test and continued rocket launches. The move is seen as a disappointment to those who hoped the country's new leader, Kim Jong-un, might take a less aggressive path than his predecessor and father, Kim Jong-il. It is also seen as a direct challenge to President Obama and South Korea's newly elected president, Park Geun-hye, who takes office next month. The statement from North Korea's National Defense Commission read, Settling accounts with the U.S. needs to be done with force, not with words, as it regards jungle law as the rule of its survival. The renewed threats come in response to the U.S.-backed resolution tightening sanctions against North Korea after its December rocket launch. At that time, North Korea repeatedly insisted that the launch was simply part of its peaceful space program. The recent statement made no mention of that. It read, "We are not disguising the facts that the various satellites and long-range rockets that we will fire and the high-level nuclear test we will carry out are targeted at the United States." South Korean officials analyzed debris from the December launch that they say indicates North Korea built and tested crucial components for a missile that can fly further than 6,200 miles. Analysts say that preparations at the Punggye test site in northeastern North Korea are underway and that a new underground test could take place on short notice. Within the international monitoring community, it is not believed that North Korea currently has the capability to launch a long-range rocket with the capability to reach the United States or the technology to mount a nuclear warhead on a long-range missile. But the U.S. is not pleased with North Korea's plans. Glenn Davies, the top U.S. envoy to the region, said in Seoul, "We hope that we don't do it. We call on them not to do it." China, North Korea's main ally in the region, is also urging restraint. China backed the U.S. resolution at the United Nations, and today the foreign ministry cautioned North Korea not to take further steps to increase tension. Alrighty, but what's interesting is that they will be a part of World War III and they will attack us at some point. Okay, let's see here. Here's an article that really made me upset. This was posted January 21st, and it's also short as well. And keep in mind, Revelation 13, Daniel 7, yeah, okay. On Monday, renowned author and humanitarian Dr. Jim Garrow made a shocking claim that about what we can expect to see in Obama's second term. Garrow made the following Facebook post. "I have just been informed by a former senior military leader that Obama is using a new litmus test in determining who will stay and who must go in his military leaders. Get ready to explode, folks. The new litmus test of leadership in the military is if they will fire on U.S. citizens or not. Those who will not are being removed." And yes, they are being removed in the form of having Russia and Chinese people come in. So got to keep that in the back of your mind. So who is the source? Garrow replied, "The man who told me this is one of America's foremost military heroes. I understand this is not coming from Alex Jones or Jesse Ventura or from anyone else the left often dismisses with great ease. Garrow is a well-respected activist and has spent much of his life rescuing infant girls from China babies who would be killed under that country's one-child policy. He also was nominated for Nobel Peace Prize for his work." His bio on Amazon.com reads, "Dr. James Garrow is the author of The Pink Pagoda, One Man's Quest to End Gendercide in China. He has spent over $25 million over the past 16 years rescuing an estimated 40,000 baby Chinese girls from near certain death under China's one child per couple policy by facilitating international adoptions. He is the founder and executive director of the Bethune Institute Pink Pagoda School, private English immersion schools for Chinese children. Today, he runs 160 schools with nearly 6,300 employees. This comes on the heels of Sunday's report in the Washington Free Beacon that the head of Central Command Marine Corps, General James Mattis, is being dismissed by Obama and will leave his post in March. The WFB article states, word on the national security street is that General James Mattis is being given the Burns rush out of his job as commander of Central Command and is being told to vacate his office several months earlier than planned. Did General Mattis refuse to fire on U.S. citizens? Something to think about. Okay. Now, I want to talk about the crazy lady, Dianne Feinstein, who needs Jesus really bad. I'm going to look at, I'm going to discuss the InfoWars article that came out today on January 24th. And here is what it has to say. Senator Dianne Feinstein unveiled her promised attack against the Second Amendment Thursday on Capitol Hill. The legislation she has proposed following the Sandy Hook massacre last month will reinstate and significantly extend the federal ban on so-called assault weapons that expired in 2004. The purpose is to dry up the supply of these weapons over time. Feinstein said, therefore, there is no sunset on this bill. Obama has vowed to sign Feinstein's legislation if it clears significant hurdles in Congress. Feinstein assembled an all-star cast to call for unconstitutionally rolling back the gun rights of millions of Americans. Those in attendance included Senator Dick Durbin, Chuck Schumer, and Representative Carolyn McCarthy. The California lawmaker surrounded herself with law enforcement officers, faith leaders, mayors, gun control advocates, and other Democratic supporters of the bill, according to roll call. Others in attendance for their obvious theatrical value included survivors of mass shootings in Arizona, Colorado, and at Virginia Tech, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter and Charles H. Ramsey, Philadelphia Police Commissioner, the Washington Post reports. A number of Democrats not attending the media event, however, have vowed to fight the legislation. On the chopping block are 158 specific kinds of semi-automatic firearms listed by name, which I'll go here and discuss with in just a little bit, and others, including handguns and shotguns, with at least one specific military characteristic. In addition, the legislation will outlaw all ammunition magazines that contain more than 10 rounds. More draconian yet, the proposed legislation will target millions of so-called assault weapons already in the hands of Americans by subjecting owners to government background checks. A number of states reacted to Obama's call to roll back the Second Amendment and his pledge to back anti-gun legislation introduced by Democrats in Congress. On Wednesday, Texas freshman Representative Steve Stockman introduced his Restore the Constitution Act in response to Obama's signing a flurry of unconstitutional executive orders and actions following his anti-firearms speech last week. Stockman's bill would designate an executive action to be advisory only if it infringes on the constitutional duties of Congress under Article 1 or the Second Amendment. Texas, Missouri, and other states have introduced legislation to block enforcement of the gun bans. Texas Representative John Otto filed HB 553 soon after Obama's theatrical speech exploiting children as stage props. The bill would make it a misdemeanor for any state or federal officials to enforce or attempt to enforce any acts, laws, executive orders, agency orders, rule or regulation of any kind whatsoever of the United States government relating to confiscating any firearm, banning any firearm, limiting the size of any magazine for any firearm, imposing any limit on the ammunition that may be purchased for any firearm, taxing any firearm or ammunition, therefore, or requiring the registration of any firearm or ammunition, therefore. So, he is taking a stand, and that is great. Here's the next article about that gives more detail of the proposed bill, assault weapons ban, that was posted January 23rd. Here's what it has to say. Connecticut's two U.S. senators are joining forces with California Senator Dianne Feinstein and other key senators proposing a retooled federal ban on assault weapons in the wake of this deadly Newtown school shooting. Senator Richard Blumenthal told the Associated Press on Wednesday that the proposed legislation to be unveiled Thursday in Washington, D.C., will more narrowly define what's considered an assault weapon under a resurrected ban. The bill, he said, will also prohibit high-capacity magazines, limiting them to a capacity of up to 9 rounds of ammunition. So it could be 9 or 10 based off of these two articles. Blumenthal said the legislation is one of the most significant bills to be introduced following the December 14 massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School. It also marks the first bill that Blumenthal and Senator Chris Murphy have worked on together as senators. The bill would be a signature moment in providing profoundly significant steps in legislative strategy, said Blumenthal, adding how final language of the bill was still being drafted on Wednesday, but is only a first step, and we need to build on it with a comprehensive program, that includes expanded background checks and mental health care. President Barack Obama has also proposed reinstating the federal assault weapons ban, which Congress failed to renew in 2004. Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid has said such a ban might clear the Senate, but doubts it could pass the House of Representatives. Obama has also proposed renewing a 10-round limit to the size of magazines. Robert Crook, a state gun rights advocate and executive director of the Coalition of Connecticut Sportsmen, said assault weapon bans, such as the one in Connecticut, have not accomplished anything. All it does is impact a legitimate citizen and has no relevance to the crime controlling an atrocious instance like Sandy Hook, he said, adding how American gun manufacturers know how to innovate and have been able to get around the state's ban. What legislators should do, if they're going to do something, they ought to come up with something innovative that both benefits the citizen and doesn't impact the citizen and benefits crime control, Crook said. Murphy, whose former House district includes Newtown, contends that a tougher assault weapons ban will save lives. He said the revised ban that's being introduced Thursday will be difficult for manufacturers to skirt and would ban the type of AR-15 rifle used by the shooter in Newtown. This bill has been in effect. There would be little girls and boys still alive in Newtown, said Murphy, adding how the only inconvenience to sportsmen would be reloading more frequently at shooting ranges because of the smaller magazines. The bill is the bread and butter of gun reform, Murphy said. If you get military rifles and high-capacity clips off the street, there are going to be less people killed in mass shootings going forward. Is as simple as that. Blumenthal said that the bill defines rapid-fire assault weapons in terms of a single feature, such as having a pistol grip or flash suppressor. Connecticut's ban defines the weapons in terms of having two features. Murphy and Blumenthal are scheduled to unveil the details of the bill with Feinstein and Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois and Chuck Schumer of New York during a news conference. Also, U.S. Representative Carolyn McCarthy of New York are a leading voice in Congress in favor of gun control, and Ed Permebutter, who represents Aurora, Colorado, where gunmen opened fire in the movie theater last year, are scheduled to be on hand, along with gun safety advocates, law enforcement, and teacher organizations, Blumenthal said. The December 14th shooting in Newtown left 20 first graders and 6 educators at the elementary school dead. The gunman also killed his mother at home on issue the shared and eventually took his own life as police arrived at the school. Well, we also know that's really fishy too, because there's too much conflicting reports on what really happened. Okay, here's the actual ban list. Okay, this was posted on January 24th. When rumors emerged about coming assault ban legislation just one day after the re-election of Barack Obama, many scoffed at the notion that the reports were real. As we now know, they were very real, and today the assault weapons ban of 2013 aimed at disarming Americans has been introduced in Congress. The list is veritable who of premier semi-automatic assault rifles that are owned by millions of Americans and include Second Amendment staples like the popular AR-15 and AK-47. In addition to the 150 semi-automatic rifles, the handguns and shotguns on the list The bill aimed to reduce magazine capacities nationwide to 10 rounds or less, as I've stated three times already. While the new legislation would not force Americans to turn in guns they own that are on the ban list, it would require registration in a national database, which includes a background check, even if you already own the gun. Like I said earlier, it's a form of control. Owners of banned firearms would also need to submit photo identification and a fingerprint for the National Registry. And then they have a huge ban list. If you want to read that, go to investmentwatchblog.com and look for the January 24th article, and you can read the entire list. It is very, very, very lengthy, I might add, just looking at it right now. So, yeah, crazy. Complete crazy, these people. And I don't know, sometimes it's mind-boggling for me just to comprehend. Okay, I used to live in Missouri for about 3.5-4 years, and now here they're coming up with a law that doesn't make me happy either, and I know lots of people over there, and I bet they're not pleased with it either. This was posted January 24th on InfoWars, and it's very short. Here's what it has to say. A Missouri Democrat wants to force parents to inform school officials of firearms ownership. We are not trying to take away anyone's gun, period, State Senator Marsha Chappelle Nadal told KMOV in St. Louis. We're not even asking what kind of gun you have. We want the school district to be able to say, you know what, there are some really terrible things going on right now, and we need to be able to talk to the parents that we know they have a gun and make sure that there's a security, that this gun is stored securely. The proposed law would criminalize and impose a $100 fine on parents who fail to inform public and private school officials, and $1,000 if they are found guilty of negligent storage of a firearm and fail to notify a school that they own a firearm. Schools have no business even knowing that a person owns a firearm. That's a person's own personal business. Schools have no business knowing that. It's all because of the Sandy Hook massacre that happened, and they're using it to their advantage to exploit people, manipulate them in order to get what they want, in order to control them, so that this so-called New World Order, I mean, there's nothing new about it, can take effect. This is absolutely ridiculous. It's the next idea in a long list of proposed ideas for gun control, making it mandatory for parents to notify their children's school about the gun supply, reports KCTV in Kansas City. Timothy Bernow, writing for the American Thinker, believes that the proposed law is intended to be as broad as possible to open the door for more and stricter regulations down the road. Were Chappelle Nadal putting forth a serious bill, she would have specific definitions and a very circumscribed legal requirement. It is open-ended for that reason. Bernow argues the law is part of a larger effort to brainwash children and turn them against the Second Amendment and the idea of gun ownership. The fact is that the left has wanted all vestiges, indeed all thoughts of firearm ownership, washed away, he writes. Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder told the Women's National Democratic Club in 1995 he wanted to use a national anti-smoking campaign as a model to change the hearts and minds of people in Washington, D.C. about the Second Amendment. Chappelle Nadal's bill, however, faces an uphill battle. Earlier this month, Missouri Republican State Senator Brian Musslinger introduced the legislation designed to nullify any federal law restricting semi-automatic firearms in the Show Me State. The law would make it a felony for federal agents to impose restrictions on firearms. Republican Casey Guernsey introduced a similar bill in the Missouri House. I'm also not surprised too much because Missouri is a very liberal state. Even though there are quite a few Bible colleges there, I'm quite surprised at times, but other times I'm not. Okay, let's see. Here's an article that goes with it called Lies in the State by Elizabeth Cameron. This is on lewrockwell.com. And this is what she had to say. I know there are some honorable people in government. I have even met some. This article is not about them. It is about those politicians hereinafter referring to as the government who aid and abet the proliferation of politically expedient lies in a thousand sneaky ways. They would appear to be the majority, or things would be better than they are. I often hear questions like, why doesn't the government address the issues of the link between psychotropic drugs and mass shootings? Why do they talk about the gun control as a means to stop the violence? Why don't they get it? Why are they so dumb? Listen, they are not dumb. They know exactly what they're doing. And when it comes to mass shootings, despite all the sympathetic things they say, they actually find such crisis useful. Problem-reaction-solution is a traditional tool used by the authoritarian regimes to expand their grip. This was once affirmed by Rahm Emanuel, Obama's former White House chief of staff, when he said in a rare moment of candor, you never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that is it's an opportunity to do things that you think you cannot do before. If the federal gun grabbers actually wanted solutions to the problem of mass shootings, they would look for actual causes. Without extreme public pressure, they are not going to do this. They will look only for causes. However, specious that support their position that more government control is the only solution. And they will try to paint as crazy as anybody who argues otherwise. Truth. Psychiatric drugs are implicated as a causative factor in mass shootings. Evidence of this abounds, certainly enough to justify a serious federal investigation. The government prefers to ignore this. Why? Because as long as they pretend not to see the connection, they can use the federal crisis du jour to fuel their gun grab, and because Big Pharma, who makes approximately a gazillion dollars a year on the sale of psych drugs, has tentacles into the government and lots of high-priced lobbyists, and the government is not keen to buck this power structure. Truth. Gun-free zones allow for the accumulation of many bodies in an attack. This is obvious because in gun-free zones, there's nobody to shoot back. Is the government going to acknowledge this? No, it doesn't serve their agenda. It is crucial to remember that if a problem persists despite the existence of solutions, then that problem is being held in a place by those who profit from it. This is done by the proliferation of lies. Line number one. We must pass more gun laws to keep guns out of the hands of violent criminals. This does not pass the test of even kindergarten logic, because criminals are, by definition, lawbreakers and therefore will have weapons, whatever the law says. Do people really think that somebody will mow down little kids in a classroom and is going to stop because the rule book says he isn't supposed to have a gun? We outlawed the murder long ago. How come that didn't stop him? Line number two. We must have gun-free zones to keep our kids safe. This is patently absurd. Any criminal who is intended upon destruction will go for the soft target every time. Why? Because it is a soft target. But even a drug-addled psychopath may be startled back into reality if he enters the school with a rifle and comes face-to-face with adults bearing drawn weapons. If he is not so startled, then he will go down quickly, just as he should, and the little kids will come alive to their parents. Line number three. We need more psychotropic drugs to handle people with violent tendencies. This does not hold up under any serious observation of cause and effect. The evidence keeps piling up the more we pump psychotropic drugs into people. The more mass shootings we get, arguments that neglect this evidence can be designed only to pave the way for increased drug sales and a tighter symbiotic power structure between Big Pharma and the state. Big Pharma profits from the expanding market of psychotropic drugs. Government gains power from civilian disarmament. They are not interested in solutions. For them, no matter how horrible this sounds, the slaughter of little kids in government schools presents them with a valuable opportunity and provides fuel for their propaganda buyers. They will, of course, never admit this. They will express only the deepest sympathy for our loss. Any politician who really wants to solve the problem of mass shootings should be standing up loudly in opposition to gun control, not only the current push for new restrictions, but also Second Amendment infringements already in place, and could be calling for an immediate investigation into the connection between psychotropic drugs, and mass shootings. Those politicians who prefer not to do this, whatever they may say to the contrary, are complicit in the lies and are therefore part of the problem. The push for psychotropic drugs is built on a pack of lies, so is the push for gun control. But no matter how normal and sensible the lies are made to sound, they are told to keep the problem in place because the problem serves the state. This is evil. The way to handle this is to keep exposing the lies and keep telling the truth. Then, as we muggles say, truth will out. Truth is more powerful than lies. That's right. And we know that by God's word, because God's word is true and being fulfilled daily. And we see that in a particular verse that comes to mind is John 14:6. I am the way, the truth, and the life. All right. Way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Okay. I don't know if any of you saw the Twilight Zone movie growing up, but I sure have seen quite a few episodes of it, and I love watching it when it is on. But I can only handle so much of gore and guts and stuff. But anyways, this is an InfoWars article, and then I have one more, and then I'll close out the show. This was posted January 24th as well, and it's pretty short, and I thought it was significant enough to read. It is entitled, Michael Bloomberg's Twilight Zone. In order to sell his anti-Second Amendment campaign, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg must convince citizens and the nation at large that disarmament leads to lower crime rates. In his nationwide effort for tighter gun control, Mayor Michael Bloomberg attributes historic crime lows in New York to strict gun laws that are strictly enforced, reports the Associated Press. The Associated Press lines up several experts who argue that taking away firearms from law-abiding citizens and Bloomberg's widespread violation of the Fourth Amendment through stop and frisk have reduced crime in New York City. The AP and Bloomberg's apologists, however, are not looking very closely at the crime statistics. In 2012, crime went up by more than 4% over the previous year. The Village Voice reported in October, although the homicide rate continues to drop, it's down 16% so far this year. A series of other crime indicators show the opposite. That jump is the citywide crime rate has continued through the sixth week of this year, up over 5% so far, with thefts and robbery accounting for the increases. The newspaper reported in February, robberies and burglaries and grand larceny are all up to 10% citywide. In mid-2011, the city experienced a spike in burglaries and grand larcenies. Despite the police trumpeting lower crime rates, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why theft is on the rise in the Big Apple. Criminals do not fear a disarmed public. The NYPD is adding to Bloomberg's Twilight Zone version of life in New York City by skewing crime stats. In recent years, the integrity of the police department's crime statistics has been questioned as accounts emerge by officers who say they are being pressured by their bosses to reduce the number of felon incidents reported. The New York Times reported in September, in interviews, numerous police officers and supervisors said that in order to keep reported crimes low, the police do seek out opportunities to downgrade crimes, classifying as misdemeanor crimes that could and often should be classified as felonies. Cops in New York like to money with the books to shine up their reputation and fool the unsuspecting into thinking the city is something other than it really is. Because of the way major crimes are counted in New York, lumping violent crimes in with far larger numbers of property theft complaints, including the largest category, grand larceny, police officials say that overall crime was down 1.3%. Without a substantial decrease in grand larcenies this year. However, the city would show an increase in overall crime, a New York Times reported in November 2010. Bloomberg and other officials cite a reduced murder rate to claim that government disarmament of citizens reduces crime, an assertion at odds with reality. Common sense and crime stats, not swept under the rug, tell the real story. Criminals are naturally encouraged to rob and rape, terrorize and murder when they know their victims are disarmed and helpless. That's right. Okay. And this next one is pretty short. Last article to close the show with. Posted January 24th. The creaking noise you hear is the walls closing in on far-right patriots, Christian identity groups, and other state enemies. That is the title of the article. Here's what it has to say. Here it comes already. Apparently, stocking up on billions of rounds of ammo, 25 shots for each and every Republican, supplying DHS with the Panzer Division, and purchasing body armor bulletproof checkpoint boosts wasn't enough to make our likable president feel secure. So besides attempting to snake our guns, Obama is now taking on the military establishment, demoting officers who dare to ask questions or are unwilling to fire on U.S. citizens. While the dangerous nuts attempt to seize control of and politicize the Pentagon as thoroughly as he has just about every other federal agency in existence, as was recently revealed, a new military exam describes peaceful political protest, i.e. the Tea Party, as low-level terrorism. Now Obama has West Point's premier terrorism think tank working on his showcase second-term propaganda project, painting you, the traditional American, as a terrorist enemy to be constrained, controlled, and if necessary, destroyed. Highlights of the study intended for training of all Army officers include, number one, warnings. A growing domestic threat from the far-right conservative groups, it says, are prone to violence. Number two, focus centers on white supremacists and Aryan Christian identity groups. It also targets groups that value the personal liberties guaranteed in the Constitution and emphasize the need to limit the power of the federal government. Number three, these anti-federalist groups expose strong convictions regarding the federal government, believing it to be corrupt and tyrannical with natural tendencies to intrude on individuals' civil and constitutional rights. Number four, while the ideology of far-right groups is designed to exclude minorities and foreigners, the liberal democratic system is designed to emphasize civil rights, minority rights, and the balance of power. Number five, it takes a broad swipe at shadowy anti-abortionists, which it claims have been extremely productive during the last two decades, amassing 227 attacks, many of them perpetuated without the responsible perpetrators identified or caught. Next to the last one, a casual reader might deduce that attack planning by these groups is inevitable, yet the report is silent on just how the groups will attack. Indeed, since 2009, there has been previously little evidence any of them ever did. The propaganda-laden report also draws a link between the mainstream conservative movement and the violent far right, then goes on to describe the liberals as future-oriented, while reporting as fact that conservatives are living in the past. Constitutional law professor Herb Titus told WND this report's author is not just politically based, but a shill for the Obamanist. He disagrees with those who favor small government, cutting back of federal government encroachments upon the powers of the state, and to discredit the movement focuses on a few gun-toting militia. Titus adds that, like so many of the Obama administration, Prilliger does not want to engage in any dialogue on the issues, but just discredit an entire political movement by ad hominem charge words. To him, the report was not produced by a serious scholar, but a blatant propagandist for the existing regime. No mention of any practical reasons some thinking persons might oppose Obama, mind you, and this isn't the first time they've attempted to smear the American right in the most vile and underhanded ways either. We live in a momentous, even frightening times, unless you're interested in becoming another obedient Abbott serf, that is. All right, that concludes our show. I thank you for listening. I hope you're not experiencing information shock, but I had so much to cover, and I bet in 2 weeks, if I can, I'll try and get another guest, but if I cannot, I'll be covering probably a lot more news because everything is intensifying. They're ramping everything up, and my life as of last week has been officially been put in danger because of me speaking out. So I do encourage you to please pray for all of us watchmen and watchwomen that are out there. And be sure, we'd greatly appreciate that. And I thank you for listening, and God bless each and every single one of you.